Welcome to the Joe and Terry Show, friends. Thank you for tuning in this Friday and every Friday, 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, CBSSports.com, the CBS Sports app, and all OTT devices. We're so glad that you are with us. I have fish behind me, as you can see, so that must mean that I'm in Florida. Covering spring training, I am covering AL East teams for the next few days. AL East reports coming up at CBSSports.com, including Tampa Bay Rays today. Stay tuned for all of that good stuff. But let us get now to the top stories of this week. All right, so let's start with David Price. Wish the news could be better about David Price, but we got the holy trinity here, unfortunately. First of all, forearm soreness in his left hand, in his pitching hand. That is a big concern as far as the left arm goes. The health definitely in question. Went for an MRI, that's two strikes. And then the third is going for second opinions with Dr. James Andrews and Dr. Neil Elatrache. So we will see what happens with Price, but there are major concerns. The Red Sox are not soft-shoeing it. These kinds of things can, we don't know yet, but these kinds of things, that kind of combination, can lead to serious injuries. Tommy John surgery can't be ruled out. We will see. There should be more information on David Price coming in the near future. We, of course, will keep you posted. What that means for the Red Sox and what that means for the rest of the AL East, though, you know, that's a question mark. Price led the Red Sox last year with 230 innings pitched, 228 strikeouts. Despite the fact that Rick Porcello won the Cy Young last year for the Red Sox, which is great. Despite the fact that they acquired Chris Sale, which is great. They definitely augmented that rotation, but there's a little bit of a concern of a lack of depth if Price can't go. Steven Wright is coming back from an injury. Drew Pomeranz is dealing with injuries. All of a sudden, if the Red Sox are minus Price, a rotation thought to be extremely deep might be facing some question marks. Could see them go out maybe and sign somebody like Doug Fister, a couple of arms out there, but there are some questions. So what does that do for the rest of the AL East? Well, you could start to see some teams potentially creep back into the race. The Toronto Blue Jays, of course, were a playoff team last year, the last two seasons. They have a great rotation, loaded, lots of young talent, lots of potential there. Did lose a little bit from their lineup with Edwin Encarnacion leaving, of course, but it's still a strong veteran team, and there are some different interesting assets. This team projected 86 wins this year by Fangraphs recently, and of course, the Red Sox projected 93 before the David Price injury. Something like this, if they were to replace Price with a half-decent pitcher, you might be talking about a downgrade of something like four wins, would still make the Red Sox the favorites in the division. But the Blue Jays suddenly get interesting. A team like the Baltimore Orioles, which made the playoffs last year, not projected as highly by any of the advanced systems, but they continue to defy the odds every single year. I talked to Buck Showalter this week. He was laughing. He said, Pakoda! We laugh at Pakoda! We kill Pakoda every single season. So we'll see if Baltimore can beat the projections. And of course, the Yankees and the Rays, we'll see if it has an effect on those teams as well. Let's go to the next topic this week, and that is David Wright. And again, the news is not great, unfortunately. A shoulder impingement for the terrific, longtime New York Mets third baseman. And at this point, he's played 75 games in the last two seasons. You can see that he's not staying healthy. When he's on the field, he's not nearly what he once was. We have to start asking questions about legacy, about how much longer does David Wright have? And when you look at Wright's career, it's actually pretty impressive. He started his career in 2004, played only with one team, of course, with the New York Mets. And wow, what accomplishments. You look at all-time third baseman, all the third basemen in the history of baseball, David Wright by a stat called JAWS. JAWS basically measures career and peak value, a stat created by Jay Jaffe for Baseball Reference. 22nd all-time, the 22nd greatest third baseman in the history of baseball is David Wright, alongside some guys that are either Hall of Fame caliber or not far away from it. The hope for the Mets is that they could replace him potentially with Jose Reyes, who's on the roster. We'll see how long Wright is out for. But if Wright is not able to answer the bell, and if this is winding down toward the end of his career, what a great career it has been. So we will see how it goes with the Mets. They're going to need to find a replacement. Wright probably not going to be what he once was ever again, unfortunately. All right, let's move on to one of our favorite segments, and that is Jonah's one-word take. Let's start with the Red Sox. They've got a sleep room. Yes, a sleep room. They are installing a room above their clubhouse during the regular season, and they're going to have another one in spring training where they have a place for pitchers, position players, whoever wants to, even coaches, to go and take a nap, get a snooze, get some sleep, get some little bit of an extra rest. My one-word take on this? Cozy. Pretty cozy. Red Sox taking advantage of some studies and some research that have been done that suggests that athletes in all sports, but certainly in baseball as well, can be under-rested. You've got long cross-country flights, flight showing up at 4:30 in the morning, you got to get to the ballpark early the next day. It just could be a strain. It could be a grind, 162-game season. The thought here, sleep research suggests that the Red Sox might be able to benefit from this. Tampa Bay Rays, by the way, have started their workouts this spring an hour later. Teams are paying more attention to it. If you're going to be cozy, I like it. Let us go to the next one, and that is Petco Park. Petco Park is underwater. It's been flooded by rains. Very rare in Southern California. Of course, drought-ridden Southern California, but rains all over the place. The pictures here, the images are absolutely shocking, frankly. My one-word take, yikes. We hopefully won't see this much longer. Petco Park has since been drained. This occurred a couple days ago, and it's in better shape. They claim that they were not worried about this, but you wonder if something were to happen again with some heavy rainfalls, how that would go. Certainly, you want to see a little bit better drainage than this. Ideally, not playing in a lake when you're playing a Major League Baseball game. And the third one we're taking of the week, it is our friend Javi Baez. Javi Baez getting a World Series tattoo on his arm. My one-word take on this, sweet. Cool, like it. I guess that's a two-word take. Javi Baez, he's got a bunch of tattoos going on. I'm a big fan of the MLB trademark that he has right on the back of his neck. It sort of evokes the idea of when you got the baseball cap, and right underneath you got the logo right here. So he's got the logo on his neck, going with the World Series tattoo as well. Listen, Baez is one of the most stylish, talented players in all of baseball, does everything with flair. He's a joy to watch. He has a lot of fun playing the game, as you can clearly see anytime you watch him. Hats off to Javi Baez. I appreciate this idea of a little bit of personal flair, a little bit of personal style. All right, it's time for our last of the six division previews. We've been doing this all spring, and we will lead off with the NL East, and we will start with the Washington Nationals. Let's go Nats! Let's go Nats! Recently wrote about the Nationals for CBSSports.com, and you know, there's a couple of schools of thought here, but the basic thing is, this is the time for the Nationals to win. They have Bryce Harper under team control for two more seasons. They've got some older guys now on their team. Some of their guys are starting to emerge in terms of age. Jason Worth is in the last year of his contract. He's 37. They've got three guys in their rotation. Good pitchers, certainly, but over 30 years old. Daniel Murphy is coming on in age. He's over 30. So some of their key contributors are not as young as you would have once thought. You've also got the owner, Ted Lerner, who's 90 years old at this point. So you've got a bunch of different factors playing a role. Sorry, 91 years old, actually, Ted Lerner. So you've got a bunch of different factors in play in terms of their urgency here. You know, of course, the unfortunate passing of Mike Ilitch, the owner of the Detroit Tigers. It's a reminder that, you know, waiting for the future, we don't know how things are going to go. You would like to see the Nationals make a move now. Can they get that done? Well, they have the same strong team that they're bringing back last year, and it's augmented by a bunch of younger talent. We're going to see Trey Turner for a full season, so that'll be excellent. They've got some other players coming into the mix that could be interesting as well. So the hope here is that their young talent can play. And of course, they made aggressive moves this offseason, including trading for Adam Eaton, giving up two strong pitching prospects in Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito. There definitely does seem to be, on the part of management, a push. Let's try to win now while we've got this window. Bryce Harper could be somewhere else 18, 20 months from now. So we will see how all that shakes out. The X factor to watch for the Washington Nationals, however, is Sean Kelly. And that is going to be a situation that bears watching when it comes to the Nats. Because you look at this roster, it's a very strong lineup. It's a loaded rotation, pretty decent bench. But that bullpen doesn't necessarily have the lock, stock, and barrel shutdown closer that you would necessarily expect. Last year, of course, they picked up Melanson in a midseason trade with the Pirates. Melanson, one of the stingiest closers in all of baseball. This year, Sean Kelly is projected to be the guy. Kelly had a magnificent season last year, and for the last 2 years has very quietly been one of the best relief pitchers in all of baseball. Kelly, 32 years old, not necessarily aging, nothing necessarily erosion of his skills, but there is some concern about his health. Two Tommy John surgeries already over the course of his career. We don't know how that's going to go. What we do know in general is that once you have multiple Tommy John surgeries, it does not get easier from there. It's just a matter of time. They picked up Joe Blanton just a few days ago to augment the bullpen. But in terms of that traditional closer, you think about the contending teams this year. The Cubs have Wade Davis. Of course, the Cubs last year had Aroldis Chapman. You think of some of the best teams, Zach Britton on the Orioles. These contending clubs, Craig Kimbrel on the Red Sox. If you look at it, all of them seem to have this guy. All right, he's the guy we could just plug and play and move on, and that's it. We don't know how it's going to go with Sean Kelly. We don't know about the depth of that bullpen. Hopefully Blanton performs, and they're going to need a big year from Kelly as well, assuming that they don't make another trade. Let's go on to the next team in the NL East, and that is the New York Mets. Meet the Mets.
meet the Mets. Step right up and greet the Mets.
And the question here with the New York Mets is, can this rotation stay healthy? On talent, you could argue that it's the most talented rotation in all of baseball. You think about Noah Syndergaard, he's the unimpeachable one, right? He's the big, strong ace, the hammer of Thor. He's got it all going on. You could see that he's got the talent, he's young, he's healthy, he gained a whole bunch of muscle this offseason, he's almost like a literal superhero. But after that, it gets dicey. You look at Matt Harvey's coming off injury, Jacob deGrom is coming off injury, Steven Matz is coming off injury, Zach Wheeler is coming off injury. If all five of those guys pitched and pitched to the full level of their abilities, we might start printing World Series tickets at this point. That is a dynamite rotation. But we don't know how it's going to go because of all those health question marks. You look at the lineup, there isn't as much room for upside. That is very much an older lineup. Bunch of guys over 30. You talk about leaning on guys like Granderson and Bruce. Obviously, they're going to have to figure out third base with David Wright, maybe now Jose Reyes. They're not talking about a bunch of 25-year-olds just coming into their prime who could take off. So it's really going to lean quite a bit on that rotation to get things done. So what can they do? How can they hedge against those potential injury risks? Well, glad you asked, because the X factor for this team, it is their pitcher, and that is Robert Gesellman. Gesellman, a very impressive MLB debut last season, came up at the end of the year, wasn't regarded as a monster prospect necessarily, but hiked his strikeout rates, induced a lot of weak contact, and showed that despite the fact that he's not a highly hyped prospect, he has a chance to fit in. Well, my money's on him pitching 150 innings this year. Let's not mince words here. When you talk about all these injury risks, whether it's Harvey, whether it's Matz, anything could happen. Even DeGrom at the end of last season wasn't right and ended up sitting down. Gesellman figures to get some copious innings, and they're going to need it from him. You can have that much talent, but it has to be on the field. If it's not on the field, it's got to come from Gesellman. It's got to come from the supporting cast. So we'll see if he's able to get it done. And one more X factor to watch for this team. How about Commissioner Rob Manfred? Rob Manfred could play a huge role in the Mets' fortunes as well. We talked about the starting rotation, but let us ponder the bullpen too. Yuris Familia, of course, the lights-out closer for this team, well, unfortunately, he's facing a likely suspension for domestic violence. Regardless of what happens in a case of domestic violence, whether the charges are dropped, whether a player is found to be not guilty, or what have you, the league can and has ruled that when these incidents happen, they can rule against the player. They've done it in the past. They did it with Aroldis Chapman, of course. The charges were dropped in that case, but he ended up getting suspended. Obviously, the main issue here is the domestic violence and hoping that that sorts itself out and then Familia learns his lesson. But the bottom line here is that on the field, when we're talking about the Mets, losing Familia could be costly. They did not make upgrades to this bullpen. They're going to lean on Addison Reed and some other guys. So we will see if they can pick up the pieces with the bullpen. If Manfred comes down and issues a very heavy suspension, 50 games or more, could have a major impact on the Mets to figure out how they're going to handle that bullpen minus Familia. Paying attention to all the AL East clubs, but for today we are focusing on NL East previews. We already looked at the Nationals and the Mets. Let us move on and talk about the Miami Marlins. The loss of Jose Fernandez last year, devastating to everybody in baseball, anybody that ever came across him. Kind, vibrant spirit, by all accounts, a guy that got along swimmingly with his teammates. Of course, a terrific story of how he came over from Cuba. His mother at one point fell off the raft that they were on. He jumped into the pitch black ocean and saved her. This is a guy who he wished all the good things for in the world. Unfortunately, passed away tragically in a boat accident last September. So, off the field, irreplaceable. He's going to be terribly, terribly missed. But on the field, we do have to get to kind of the cold analysis of what you do at that point. And when it comes to the Marlins, it's very difficult to replace anybody Fernandez's caliber, but they did themselves no favors with how they went about their shopping. Edinson Volquez was their big acquisition of the offseason. Volquez, number two highest ERA in all of baseball last year among any pitcher that qualified for the ERA title. He was a guy who really benefited from the defense that they had in Pittsburgh and Kansas City. It lowered his numbers a little bit. The Marlins don't necessarily have a defense quite as elite as those recent Pittsburgh and Kansas City teams. And Volquez is getting on. He's well into his 30s, does not have great command, not a great replacement. Dan Straley, another pitcher picked up quietly from the Cincinnati Reds, he's got a chance to help. He could definitely be a competent guy within the middle of that rotation. But as far as finding an ace, they don't really have one. Wei-Yin Chen, the expensive free agent they acquired a couple years ago, he could be functional, although he really struggled last season. But we're not talking about any top of the rotation starters. So you've got a team that might have some talent in their lineup, certainly including one of the most talented outfields in all of baseball. But without the starting pitching, it's going to be a challenge. They do have an X factor on this team, and it is the star of the team, really. It's Giancarlo Stanton. It's weird to talk about the highest paid player, potentially, in all of baseball, Giancarlo Stanton, as being an X factor, but he really is, because whether he's on the field or not is going to make all the difference. In the last five seasons, only one of those times has he played in 123 or more games. So here's a guy who has hit 20-some home runs several times as a result of playing in reduced playing time. But the thought is, if he can ever just stay on the field 150 or more games, a 40, maybe even a 50 home run season is within reach. On exit velocity, barrel percentage, all the really advanced StatCast stats that we look at these days, Stanton is as beastly as it comes. He absolutely demolishes the ball. His talent is not in question. It is strictly his health. If Stanton can come through one of these years and stay healthy alongside Marcell Ozuna and especially Christian Yelich, who I love, a fantastic player already. If he can get a little bit more lift in his swing, he's right now a ground ball type of hitter. We could be talking about a star player. Fangraphs recently suggested if Yelich could put the ball in the air, he could be Joey Votto. That's not that crazy to say Yelich is that good. Along with Stanton, that could become a dynamite. The Marlins are going to need that with their so-so starting pitching. All right, next team in the NL East, it is the Philadelphia Phillies. Let's go, Phillies! And in the Phillies' case, the rotation is a source of optimism when you think about Vince Velasquez, Aaron Nola, and Jared Eichhoff. This is a threesome of right-handed pitchers with some real talent. You think about how the Phillies started off last year, and yes, some of it was lucky. They were winning one-run games. Jeanmar Gomez was pitching out of his... certain things that you did not necessarily expect. But the good news for this Phillies team is that we saw flashes of brilliance from these starting pitchers. Velasquez, in particular, had one of the highest strikeout games by any pitcher in all of baseball last year, and had a couple starts where he looked absolutely unhittable. Eichhoff has got the great curveball, of course. So does Nola, for that matter. Two great breaking balls from both of those pitchers. There's some real raw material here. There's some real talent to build around. So what the Phillies are doing, like any rebuilding team, is just figuring out what's going to stick. They're going to run these guys out there, hopefully for 90-plus starts, and see if they're truly mainstays. If they are, that could speed up the rebuilding process. If you all of a sudden have three fairly reliable starters with multiple years of team control left, what a boon that would be to a Phillies team that's, of course, looking to get back to the glory days 08-11. That's what you would like to see from this Philadelphia Phillies club, and these three pitchers could be three guys who could potentially make it happen. The X factor on this ball club, it's a guy who hasn't played for the Phillies yet. It's J.P. Crawford. Crawford is the number one ranked prospect in the Phillies organization, a very athletic and very capable shortstop, but did not have a devastating or dominant year last year by any means in the minors. The thought was he was one of the highest rated prospects in all of baseball, so results in the minor leagues last year. Now, prospects can have all kinds of trajectories. They can go straight up, they can kind of bounce around a little bit. The thought with Crawford is the skill's there, the glove is there, the bat is there, he will pick it up. And of course, if he becomes that centerpiece player, something else that could expedite the rebuilding process in Philly, where they've got Matt Klentak at the helm as the young GM. They've got a lot of smart minds in that organization. It's not the old school team that it was 5 or 10 years ago. They're very progressive and they're making moves. If those young players can start to come through, things could start to speed up in Philly. And our last team in the NL is... Braves! I will never get over the Shelby Miller trade. I've got a story to share about the Shelby Miller trade. In the winter meetings of 2015, when there was a bunch of us sitting at dinner, a bunch of writers, a bunch of people, and so forth. And there was a member of the Braves organization at our dinner we were friends with, and we'd known from before, and I was sitting directly across from this gentleman. And 15 minutes in, as we're sitting down, he gets this huge smile on his face, and his phone, psh, 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 blowing up, store on this, text. And then we all start looking at our phones to see what's going on Twitter. Well, the Braves have traded Shelby Miller for Dansby Swanson and Ender Inciarte and Aaron Blair. And this member of the Braves organization, who kept it totally secret to that point, we just looked at him. He said, oh, you got it. You guys made this deal happen. And it has been an absolute blockbuster for the Braves. Dansby Swanson makes his Major League debut last year. And aside from having maybe the best hair I've ever seen in my entire life, him or Bryce Harper, great contest. But a very sound defender, good bat, precocious kind of player. He's got a chance to be a cornerstone of that organization for years and years to come. Ender Inciarte, magnificent defensive center fielder. Maybe Kevin Kiermaier might be the best defensive center fielder in baseball. You can make a case for Inciarte as number two. So much so that the Braves signed him to a multi-year contract to lock him up into his 30s. A so bad, but such a good defender. They love having that defense for years to come. Aaron Blair didn't perform quite as well in 2016, but he still got very good stuff. He's a capable pitching prospect. He was considered one of our more highly ranked pitching prospects in all of baseball. All that for giving up a handful of years of Shelby Miller. And Shelby Miller, by the way, got absolutely torched last season. This is a trade that could pay dividends for years and years to come in Atlanta. Kudos to the Braves for making this happen. When you are a rebuilding team, you need to not only develop prospects, but hit on some trades. Of course, the Chicago Cubs, Cashner for Rizzo, the Addison Russell trade. You need those kinds of things to click. The Braves have a chance for this trade, for the Shelby Miller trade, to work out in a similar fashion. The X factor for the Atlanta Braves, though, not necessarily a young guy, not necessarily somebody just coming up. I'm looking at Matt Kemp as the potential X factor. Now, when you think about the Braves in totality, this is a team that specifically went out this offseason and acquired multiple veterans. They got R.A. Dickey, they got Bartolo Colon, they got Brandon Phillips, and they already had Matt Kemp from a previous trade. These guys are not going to be part of the next winning Braves team. The Braves are not going to win this year, probably not next year. Those guys have already pretty much aged out of being really high caliber players, so you don't expect much. The hope here is that they produce so much in the first 2 or 3 months of the season that they become attractive trade bait. Colon or Dickey would be rentals, they're on 1 year contracts. Brandon Phillips is in the last year of a long term contract. But Kemp is interested because he has 3 years left on his multi year deal, the giant deal that he signed with the Los Angeles Dodgers. 3 years and $63 million. Let's not kid ourselves. If Matt Kemp hits a zillion home runs in the first half of the season, it's not like another team is going to say, we accept the rest of the $63 million that we owe this guy, prorated over the season, and we're also going to give you a whole bunch of great prospects. But if Kemp can produce power, and he still has that power bat despite being slower and not nearly as good a defender that he was, but if he can start hitting a bunch of homers right out of the gate, there is a possibility that the Braves could eat some of that contract and maybe get a little bit of talent in return. Some B-level prospects, potentially. You know the Braves would like to do that. They do have the money to pay out the contract, but of course, as a team that's looking longer term, that's the hope. Maybe Kemp can convert some of those early home runs, early potential, early production into some real value for the future. That's what this team would like to see. So that's it for our NL East preview, and that's it for this week's show. We will see you next week, friends, 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, CBS Sports, CBS Sports app, all OTT devices. But before we go, we're going to leave you with this, and that is Yoenis Cespedes. Yoenis Cespedes, God, we all love him. Producer Scott Riley, we know that Scott loves him. We're all big Cespedes fans. He's got a lot of flair. He always shows up in incredibly interesting cars to spring training and so forth. But we came across these pictures. It's Yoenis Cespedes on his ranch. The photo bucket here is just tremendous. Please enjoy these photos of Cespedes. And we will see you next week at the same time. Thanks, friends.